Sunday, April 20th, 2008, was the last day of the 5th Annual Human Rights Film Festival in New Orleans, and the day before the Security and Prosperity Partnership Summit, at which the presidents of Mexico and the United States and the Prime Minister of Canada will meet to discuss security and trade. The day began with a workshop on what the Security and Prosperity Partnership means for North America and New Orleans.
The SPP started in March of 2005 in secret and without any sort of congressional oversight. It's not a treaty and will never go before legislators, but relies exclusively on executive authority. Not only does it make it invisible, which is one of the reasons why they meet in secrecy, they meet behind mass military force. This is a response to increased competition for oil and gas reserves, as well as a worsening trade balance in China. They want to have increased, worker programs to ensure cheap and vulnerable labor. They want to make sure that they have endless more supply. They want to make sure that they have profit. And I think that for us, it's important to think about how basically these arrangements undermine community when we're trying to talk about resistance. Because ultimately, it's communities and it's people that are going to make that change happen. The basic functions of undermining community that we're seeing is the forced migration of people through either the economic, the economic displacement. There's actual, these guest worker programs are just, state legalized human trafficking, right? You see prisons being used within the United States to exploit labor and remove people from their communities. And then also the forced migration within New Orleans, especially, is the internal displacement, right? That the setup of privatization here and the militarization of New Orleans has led to a population that cannot come home, at least 250,000 that we know of at this point in time. I think that especially when it comes to forced migration, it's interesting to hear that in rural parts of Mexico, it's men who have disappeared, where here in New Orleans, we're seeing that women are unable to come back. We've seen an 85% drop in female head of household. That's particularly black women, African American women. With the lack of housing, with the lack of health care, with the lack of schools, the people who are caretakers, not just as mothers, but people who then also take care of other family members, are then put in a situation where you cannot return to this place. So that is another breakdown of community and a form of population control, right? Because how are you supposed to rejuvenate, and I'm not trying to be heterosexist about this or anything, but babies get made in a particular way, and that's just a biological reality. So seeing how just these systems perpetuate within our own bodies and perpetuate because of the systems that they have to set up, they have to do massive repression to make sure that this happens. So I think that one of the things that we can talk about, in terms of repression, and seeing how locally here in New Orleans, the higher powers are operating is being mimicked, if not directed by, the way the SPP is functioning. The way that it's done in secret, the fact that you cannot have any sort of people's voice involved in these processes at all. You could see what happened to people here in New Orleans who were trying to fight for public housing, right? They kicked people out, they tased everybody, and all for what? So they could privatize mass land space, because this is a large land grab that relates back to the super corridors. How are you going to have six lanes of traffic? How are you going to have all of this unless you take a lot of land? There's, I think, over 600,000 acres of land at stake in Texas right now. And you can see that, so imagine a community that has an interstate put through it, like the Treme, right? You see how that interstate broke up that community. This is just massive scale. So you have cities instead of just one small neighborhood, So these unfair policies that are disintegrating our communities can't move forward without repression, right? Because people don't like this. They don't want you to take away their family. They don't want you to take away your means for your means for living. And so you have to have mass militarization. And we're seeing that, internationally, we're seeing that Canada and Mexico are saying it's okay for US troops to go into their country. And for here, we're seeing militarization of police forces. For New Orleans, we're the most, blatant example. I mean, throughout the United States, militarization is occurring of police forces in terms of the weapons they use, the strategies that they use, and how they go after people. So here, it's just the National Guard. They just don't care. Why front? So what that does is that gets us used to having military presence in our streets, you know? I mean, to the point where they now patrol and we don't really, you know, they have little squad cars that look like squad cars because the Hummers, they were intimidating. You know, and it had bad, you know, public reaction. So you give them smaller cars as opposed to being like, maybe we should militarize our city. Also, the racial profiling in communities of color is another way to terrorize people into submission, as well as do, once again, make people disappear. But it's justified, right? They justify it through racial profiling, they justify it through concepts of crime and through fear and the need for security. Another direct effect of the militarization that we see here in New Orleans is that people who have criminal records can no longer get jobs working on the docks, right? Because of these new standards that they have with the Transportation Security Administration. Basically, they're saying that if you have a criminal record, you can't work on the dock because it would make it unsafe. Now, contractors themselves will tell you we don't need Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts to work on the docks, right? But so what is this arrangement really for? You know, you're gonna lock more people out. You're gonna make sure that people have to go through underground economies to make sure that they can make a living at best, or just lock them away and exploit their labor to do the rebuilding or the cleanup of the city, which is another way that we've seen things go down here. Once again, the forced migration of people. We're just a very, very direct example of what they're doing on a very large level.
One of the most messed up things about the SPP, the Security and Prosperity Partnership, is that they decided to have it here in New Orleans, where all of us are at such like stretched thin, low capacity because we're organizing against and resisting against so many other egregious forms of colonialism, imperialism, racism, sexism, and so much more.
Meanwhile, on Iberville Street, residents of New Orleans held a demonstration against the Security and Prosperity Partnership Summit.
My name's Roderick Dean, and I'll be speaking at today's rally here in New Orleans to basically discuss the situation on the ground here in New Orleans as it relates to post-Katrina rebuilding. I think it is the height of hypocrisy and indignation that George Bush would have the gall to hold such a summit here when in the State of the Union address in January 2008, George Bush never once mentioned New Orleans.
At the 5th Annual Human Rights Film Festival in New Orleans, several different local community organizations were given the opportunity to talk about their work.
My name is Robert Goodman. I'm from the West Bank, formerly incarcerated for 23 years. I've been in all our juveniles and adult facilities. My involvement with Safe Street started when my brother, who was about the third mental patient, who was murdered by the NOPD after Katrina. We are a membership organization connected with the community. And one of the biggest cases that we're dealing with right now is just like another Gina Six. It's the Danziger Seven, the Madison family, who also, brother was killed, was a mental patient during Katrina, who was killed on the Danziger Bridge. So I just want to bring that to y'all attention. We, Safe Street, was just formed right after Katrina, and we are trying to reform the criminal justice system and NOPD and OPP. So yes, we took part in the Gina Six, you know, Safe Street. We rode like we rode deep all the time. So we was there to support that. Right now I just come off a trip trying to help Flick set up a chaplain in Toluca where they shut down the juvenile facility that we would like to turn into a learning facility, but we're trying to set up a Flick chapter there. And I call it the land of hopelessness because, yeah, here in New Orleans, we're dealing with a lot of extremes, but it's just so much these people don't have. Y'all know what I mean. But nevertheless, as I go on, I just want to thank you all being here. And y'all here is giving me the inspiration to do the work I do. And words can't express what this means tonight, and whatever anyone could do to support the grassroots organizations and their efforts and work. I know some of us on staff, but truly, believe me, money can't pay the work that D'Amica do, and a lot of all you that is out here doing. And I just want to thank you for this opportunity to say what I'm saying.
The day ended with the showing of a documentary on the Genus 6, six black boys subjected to racism at the hands of a local district attorney in the American South.
On August 30th, at a school assembly, Kenneth Purvis asked the assistant principal if black students could sit under the tree in the high school's courtyard.
I don't know. I was wondering, you know, I was looking at it every day, like they sit under the tree every day. So I just asked. I don't know why I just did.
The assistant principal said Kenneth could sit anywhere he wished. But the next day, nooses were found hanging from the tree's branches. The superintendent brushed the incident off as a prank. The school administration didn't even hold an assembly to discuss it. And the three white students who hung the nooses were not expelled. Black students staged a spontaneous demonstration, crowding under the white tree en masse.
Come say, y'all wanna go stand on a tree? We said, yeah, and they said, if you go, I'll go, if you go, I'll go. So one person went, next person went, everybody else just went.
After the demonstration, the police came to the campus and held an assembly of all the students at Gina High. District Attorney Reed Walters addressed the students.
District Attorney Reed Walters, you know, proceeded to tell those kids that I could end your lives with the stroke of a pen. And the kids just was like in awe that District, you know, Reed Walters would tell these kids that. He held a pen in his hand and told those kids that, see this pen in my hand, I can end your lives with the stroke of a pen.
The nooses in Gina were a threat to black students trying to integrate their playground. But when they continued to question the school's de facto segregation, to police and the district attorney, black students became the threat. Over the next few months, racial tensions grew. Then, in November, after someone burned down half of a high school, Gina erupted. On Friday, Robert Bailey was beaten by a group of whites for entering a predominantly white party. Reed Walters charged one of Robert's attackers with simple battery. That Saturday, a white man pulled a shotgun on Robert Bailey and Theo Shaw at a gas station. The students wrestled the gun away and reported the incident to police. Reed Walters charged them with assault and theft of a firearm, but brought no charges against the white man who had pulled the weapon. Every first-year law student knows to point a weapon at someone constitutes legal assault. But this was Gina. And on Monday, the first day the students returned to campus after the fire, another fight broke out during lunch hour. But this time, the victim was white, the accused black. And Reed Walters had his chance to make good on the threat he had made 2 months earlier. Reed Walters personally upgraded the charges on the Gina 6 from simple battery to second-degree attempted murder and conspiracy, and promised to seek the maximum sentence.
The documentary was followed by a question-and-answer session with the parents of the Gina 6.
So I'd like to welcome to the front Marcus Jones, John Jenkins, Tina Jones, and Theo McCoy.
It's been so much going on in that little town all these years, so it wasn't no surprise. But they had tried to go too forward this time. So we hadn't stood up for our kids. They'd been in Angola right now.
See, the racism in Gina is deeper than what people that we done told y'all is deeper than what we done told y'all. There's a lot of stuff that's going on with the Gina 6. A lot of people that's behind it don't want to see these boys get off. With the big publicity that was put on the town, with us calling the white people racist, the DA racist, the judge racist, see, that strike a nerve with a lot of white people, especially with white people that's in power. Because little as y'all know from this film and what y'all done heard and read is deeper than what we can tell y'all from our point of view now that y'all wouldn't even much believe. Is a lot of people don't want the Gina Six to be a history-making big event for black people.
This has been the 5th annual New Orleans International Human Rights Film Festival, and we're less of an arts event and more an organizing event. We're a tool or a resource for social justice organizing in this city. We're founded and organized by activists and by grassroots organizations in the city that fight on these issues. Organizations like Insight Women of Color Against Violence, New Orleans Palestine Solidarity, Safe Street Strong Communities, Critical Resistance New Orleans. And we are here to struggle on these issues, to link local issues and international issues, to set the paradigm in these issues and set the framing of the debate on these issues, to say this is not just about one person's struggle, this is about a struggle internationally. They shut down public housing in New Orleans, and they're demolishing public housing in New Orleans, and they're demolishing houses in Palestine. We're fighting for the right of return for New Orleans, we're fighting for the right of return in Palestine. We want to seize the media in New Orleans, they seize the media in Oaxaca. This is an international struggle, it's a local aspect of an international struggle, and we bring these issues and these struggles together here at this film festival. We got the Gina Six here, we got organizations like Safe Streets, Strong Communities, like Insight Women of Color Against Violence. We give people ways to plug into these struggles. We bring the different movements together at this festival, and that's what it's about.